This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's having a very good day as we try to warm this thing up. Looks like it's going to be a little chilly today. Temperature's going to be in the mid-60s, not what you would normally think would be the summertime. But, hey, it's been staying reasonably dry, so that's a good thing. And, of course, lots of interesting thing going on. Of course, we've got so many big things with the NBA now entering free agency, LeBron James on the market. See how quickly this market goes, but it's going to be fast. I know that Kevin Durant has been able to opt out. In fact, you will take your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. All right, so the Mariners get another win, and again, that schedule continues to help them out. Kansas City comes in. They're only scoring 3.5 runs a game, and they just get shut down 4-1. Marco Gonzalez threw a complete game. How about that? Mike Zunino pounded a long home run, 454 feet. That was just pretty solid. And so now the Mariners, they win. They're now 52-31. The Astros lose, so they're right now 2.5 games ahead of the Mariners. Both the A's won and the Angels won. That was kind of an interesting one for the A's because they're playing Cleveland, and they're in a stretch right now where they have really until the All-Star break only one series against the losing team, and then the same, almost the same thing for the Angels. So this is a time right now where the Mariners can really make up ground and put a distance between the Angels and the A's. Still 7 games where they have the advantage. But nevertheless, big victory. Series is going to continue today against Kansas City. 7:10 will be the game time. 6 o'clock on the pregame show. In other news, looking in the National Football League, a little bit of a busy day yesterday. Robert Turbin, former running back of the Seahawks, who's with Indianapolis, 4-game suspension for PED. We already know about Jameis Winston. He gets a 3-game suspension. Nigel Branham, a linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles, he gets a 1-game suspension. So kind of a Friday news dump by the National Football League. J.R. Sweezy ends up getting cut by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kind of interesting. He was 2 years, entering the third year of a 5-year contract. Didn't play the first year because of a bad back. Got hurt late in the season. And so he's been replaced. A lot of people wondering, is he going to come back here? I guess if he comes back for the minimum, that would be one way to do it. But I would have to think that Tom Cable and the Oakland Raiders are probably going to reach out. Although they have 2 Pro Bowl caliber guards. I don't know if there's any real need to bring him in there other than just backup work. But J.R. Sweezy released by the team. Of course, in the NBA, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan all opted out of their contracts, and so they hit the free agent market. No trade so far, but we'll keep you up to date on what's going on. I always find it fascinating to follow the NBA as far as this time of the year, because what happens is you get to find out in reality who's going to be where at the end of the season, who's going to be the pretenders, who's going to be the contenders, and those are that's our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Cleveland, how you doing this
morning? I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, doing just lovely. You know, you're talking about the NBA. Well, there's a lot of begging and pleading going on right now, huh?
Yeah, did you see the one thing that I know Stephen A. Smith put out? And I don't know if it's valid or not. I would have to think it is. He's a pretty good reporter. But apparently Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, is saying that, hey, I'm glad he's leaving LeBron because now I get my team back.
Oh, okay, you get your team back, huh?
Now, you remember the last time we heard that? San Francisco 49ers. When they let Jim Harbaugh go because they were so sick of having him in the office and how sick they were being around him, and look what happened to them for the next couple years.
Yeah, you know, it didn't look too good after Jim Harbaugh left San Francisco.
Oh, no, it's terrible.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for because you just might get it.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
LeBron James brought billions of dollars to that area.
Oh, no question. Billions. I mean, it's like, okay, so you get your team back, but you get a losing team. It's going to be, you know, it's going to take them years to be able to bounce back.
Oh, definitely. You know, when you have sort of get a once-in-a-lifetime player or a once-in-a-lifetime coach, you know, you've got to have the ability to try to keep that person interested and keep that person around. Mm-hmm. And that's in any sport. If you look at it in football, when you get a real good, like Jim Harbaugh, when he went to San Francisco, he brought that luster back to San Francisco.
Right.
You know, yeah. When he, you know, right now, Kyle Shanahan, you know, it looks like things are looking up. You know, you got the quarterback and he's there. You know, things are looking up. But it was bleak, John.
Oh, it's horrible.
Terrible. Once he walked out that door, you know, to each his own. I mean, I think I would think about those things before I would say them. You know, you got to throw cautions to the wind on situations where you say that. And speaking of football, go back to Tampa Bay. Sweezy, you think that's because of his back?
His back caused one problem. Then, of course, he broke his leg. More than anything else, it as a signing that doesn't work out. And that's why everybody who clamors for teams to get into free agency, you don't realize what you're getting. You know, J.R. Sweezy had a bad back, apparently, in his last season in Seattle. So you pick him up, you sign him, you give him almost $6 million, and he doesn't play for the first year. He starts out strong and then starts to wear down a little bit. Then he breaks his leg. And so it's like, okay, that's what you get. And that's one of the problems in free agency, because you don't know necessarily what's going to be there. The team that had them, they know, but the team that gets them don't necessarily. And that's why, and a lot of times, you sign a big name free agent or you sign a high price free agent, and by the third year, he's not there.
You know, and that's the truth, because you know, a free agent to me is just pretty much like a rookie. They've got to come in and fit your system. You know, you take a guy that comes in, he's been in a system 5, 6, 7 years on another team. You've got to see if he can fit what you're doing. You can't just pluck him off. It's like taking a defensive tackle, a three-technique defensive tackle, and put him in a 3-4 defense. It's going to look like a square peg in a round hole. It doesn't fit. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So people, you know, and I agree with you 100%, when free agency come around, I'm not that crazy about that first week of free agency, because I think you're throwing money at just to try to please fans and all this, what have you. A true good fan will recognize, you know, maybe you should just relax and get guys that fit your system.
Right.
You know, later on. Then just going for the big market name. Because how many market names, you know, big-time free agents have panned out? You can count them maybe on two hands.
Yeah.
You know?
Usually the top two or three work out because they're the best players. Like, you know, you see it in Ndamukong Suh, or you see a Calais Campbell. I mean, A.J. Boye. I mean, those work out. But once you start to get to five or six, that's where it starts to break down, because now you're overpaying somebody, or you find out you're overpaying somebody.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you one in particular, John. The Saints with Jarius Byrd didn't work out. Not at all. I mean, they give him $19 million the first year.
Right.
And I think he played five games. You know?
Right.
He was hurt all the next year. And then, the third or fourth year, they just had it in cutting. That was a $50 million deal right there. I mean, and who did they let go? A guy that fit their system. Malcolm Jenkins.
Right. Well, how about in the quarterback market, Brock Osweiler goes to Houston for $19 million a year, and it was so bad on the relationship so bad on the performance, they had to give up a second-round pick the next year just to unload him to Cleveland.
Just to make him go.
Yeah, Mike Glennon gets a $15 million deal to go to Chicago, and he's benched after six games.
And they bench him, and he was the rookie.
Yeah.
You got to think about those things before you, to me. When you're in free agency, you have to make sure that that guy fits your system, and before you throw that kind of money, will it pay off in the long run? You know, I think the real promising gamble that I'll go back to New Orleans that they had was Drew Brees and Darren Sproles, of course.
But remember, that was a supreme gamble, because at that time there was two main teams bidding, Miami and New Orleans. And so Miami, even though Nick Saban wanted to overrule the doctor would not allow the signing because he didn't think the shoulder was going to be okay. You know, New Orleans took the chance, and of course now landed a Hall of Fame quarterback that has kept them at least in the main picture ever since he's been there in 2006.
There you go. I mean, it's a gamble in free agency, and it's a gamble that you definitely have to do your homework on. Let's go back to Tampa Bay. Jameis Winston. Terrible, Mr. Clayton.
Horrible.
Just terrible.
But I'll tell you what, I mean, I know I'm in the minority on this. I don't think I have very many people siding with me. But, you know, everybody says, okay, player conduct, it's a shame that he didn't get to six games. Well, my point is, this is America, right? This is, you have the rule of law in America, and you have the rule of Roger Goodell. And so my point is, you know, they are you know, taking these cases, even though if you were taken into a court, there's not enough evidence to really convict, because in this case, there was no police report, there was no police investigation, there was no formal charge, and I mean, I would assume he did it. The fact, and I'm happy that he settled and, you know, was able to admit that he did it, because it shows you how disgusting he can be in his life, and so I'm happy about that. But people were criticizing the league for saying, oh, you're all over the place with all this stuff. Well, you know, in the case of Ezekiel Elliott, in a case of other players that get player conduct, when there's no police report, I mean, you still don't have the normal way to defend yourself. You're going up against a home field advantage for the NFL, and in the end, if they just want to say, we're going to give you six, or we'll settle with three, fine.
Yeah, well, you know, Mr. Clayton, this all stems back to those situations with domestic violence, you know, which have the Ray Rice and all those other guys. You know, the NFL is trying to clean that image up that they have out there as far as dealing with how player conduct is perceived to be in the public eye right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so any little incident that's going to happen, they're going to jump on it. They're going to try to kill it, and they're going to try to make it go away, because they don't want to be part of the everyday news cycle of saying that the NFL is allowing these players to do what they want to do and still play football and earn money.
Well, I'll tell you what, to the league's credit, one thing out of this, the many databases and worksheets that I follow, but you couldn't answer this, but it's like, how many arrests do you think there have been this year, or at least off the field incidents? Well, the answer is 18. There's been some years where there's been as many as 60, but with all the stiff penalties that are out there, and you noticed there has, in the whole month of June, we're about ready to, has there really been an active player involved in any off the field thing? At this stage, no.
No, you're right, 100% right. As far as concerned right now, I think it's right now is way better than it was years ago. But I agree with you right there on that point. But like I say, it goes back to they don't want to be put in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime they get a chance, any situation that comes abroad, they're going to jump on it, and they're going to try to just destroy it before it even becomes part of the news cycle. That, you know, because they feel that their image is predicated on those players.
And that's fine. I mean, I think because, I know that Roger comes up with, you've got to protect the shield. Well, that's fine, because you see how bad it's gotten. I mean, when it got so bad that the players, when Gene Upshaw was the executive director of the NFLPA, the players went over to Eugene and told Eugene, go talk to Roger and see if we can set up some player conduct thing. This is getting bad. It hurts the game.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you implement some things, and again, I don't agree with the whole system that they have. I think that they really should have an independent arbiter making the decisions on this. But
I agree with you.
But the results have been is better, because again, whole month of June, you know, because there's a thing on USA Today. I think the San Diego Tribune Review also does it. You know, they have a database of NFL arrests and NFL problems, and whether it's domestic or DWI or whatever, DUI, it's all out there, and the month of June is void.
Yeah. Do you think they should be allowed, so the team should be allowed to have a little more contact with the players right now in this period right now? You think they should be allowed to have a little more contact? I mean, like saying, like, you know, training, stuff like that.
I think they should have more kind of voluntary things, that if the players want to train at the facility, you know, say February, March, and April, that should be allowed, not under any kind of jurisdiction of the coaches and that, but I think that you can maybe seek the help of a guy, the trainer, to kind of keep you in shape. That should be allowed. But no, because, I mean, just go back to the days when Tom Coughlin was in Jacksonville. I remember there was a wedding Mark Brunell and several of the other players wanted to go to back in, the beginning of July, and Tom wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, that's the general. That was Tom Coughlin. I mean, you know, you ever watch him when he was in the Giants?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, but it's successful. It worked out.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I gotta give it to him, you know. But mm-hmm. Tom Coughlin, he knew that if he didn't do that to some of those players, you imagine how some of those players would act?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Yeah. you got to keep your finger on the pulse sometimes with some of those NFL players. That's why I say, like just what you said, voluntary workouts, volunteering in the communities, you know, letting them come to the facility and work out, even if it's just with the strength and conditioning coach.
Right.
You know,
so I think they should allow that, because what ends up happening is that you're training on your own. And sure, you may pay for a trainer. You may try to get somebody to help you out. But if you don't do it the right way, first thing happens, you get on the field and you blow out an Achilles. You blow out an ACL. And those are non-contact injuries. And some of it just goes to training. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton. Have a good fourth, my friend.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Haven't heard him for a couple weeks, but let's go to Raider Jim. Jim, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John.
Good to hear your voice.
Oh, good to hear you too, John. I need to get my professor fixed. Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to make a shout out to all of us out there. Happy birthday to America on the 4th of July this Wednesday. And I hope we can all celebrate with a lot of, you know, with a lot of fun.
Yes, that'll be great.
Yeah. John, the Mariners are awesome. I mean, they're just doing so well, John. It's really great to see it. And I think Salk has a point when he says that he just doesn't think Seattle folks are aware how fun it is to see these guys play on the diamond, John.
Well, and I'll tell you, because and you can appreciate this. You know, you look at the AFC last year, right? It was terrible. There weren't six playoff teams. I mean, it was an awful, because, you know, whether teams had broken things down or teams were just broken, there was, you know, there really were not six playoff teams. I mean, you can make a case for maybe four. Because, you know, New England, Pittsburgh, you know, I thought Oakland was going to be, but you saw they were broken. Kansas City is a playoff team, and Jacksonville is a playoff team. After that, you can maybe make the case, I know Tennessee made it, but are they really a playoff caliber team? I think this year they are. How do they feel internally? Well, they won a playoff game, they won nine games, and they fired their coach.
Yeah, they fired their coach, right.
Okay. Buffalo was able to sneak in on the last minute, which was fine. So this is so much like the AFC, in the sense that you have seven now with the Angels getting back and winning last night, being one game above 500. But, you know, seven teams with winning records, but really five teams that legitimately are, you can say, playoff contenders. The Angels have dropped off because of their 15 guys on the disabled list. Oakland, they're doing a great job, but they have four starters that are on the disabled list. And so it's inevitable that there's no mystery here. I mean, the Angels come to town next week and over a course of a week play six games. If the Mariners win four or five of those games, the Angels are done.
Right. Yeah, I think the way it's playing out, I mean, everyone expected the Yankees to do well. Everyone's expecting Boston to do well. So they're going to fight it out, but they're both going to be in the playoffs. You got the Indians, you know, they're not, I wouldn't call them mediocre. They're above average, but I don't think they're exceeding expectations either.
No, they'll be fine. Then, but again, what's happening is that, and you bulk up. I mean, I remember the years back in the mid 2000s when the NFC was bad and the AFC would be 1 year 44-20 in interconference play, and then the next year was like 40-24. Well, that dilutes really. You get a over record, an overestimated record of what really is. So, like, you know, you look at the run differential so much. I look at that because it's a barometer of where you really are. I go back to the 2012, you know, Baltimore Orioles. They were like about a plus 10 or so on the run differential, which puts them in the category of being an 82-win team if you use the numbers, but they won over 90 games.
Uh-huh. Very interesting.
But again, with that fact, there's no drama in the American League. I mean, other than Seattle, which can just really enjoy this ride, and they will, you don't have any mystery. So in two-thirds of the American League, they're all out of it and bored.
Right, right. It's going to be great for the M's, and it's going to be great for the city. I mean, we have the longest drought of any major league sports franchise now of not being in the playoffs, and I think we're going to finally make it, John. I'm really excited. I mean, Felix is doing better. He had a disastrous start against the Devil Rays, but he turned it around. Seeing him interact with service after he did so well. That first game after doing so well was just, it was golden. You know, I mean, Haniger is just amazing. I mean, he's just incredible. I went to a speaking engagement about 2 weeks ago, and Edgar was there, John, and he's very high on Haniger. And then Gene Segura, John, I mean, his quiet leadership is remarkable. And if anyone doubts that, okay, we don't have Cano. And Segura's really picked it up. And when he was out of the lineup for four or five games because of that arm infection, we saw how, you know, the Mariners were for the most part average after that. But then he comes back, and he's just a spark plug. And, you know, that quiet leadership says a lot to me about his worth, not only on the team, but throughout the league. And I hope people vote for him for the All-Star ballot because, you know, his average is amazing. He's always getting at least two hits a game. I mean, there's a reason why Rick Riz calls him, you know, Gene, the hitting machine. I mean, there's a reason for that. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. No, it really is, and it's just fun because you can see they have a fun group. And what I appreciate, because, you know, trying to study rosters and, you know, now with the football being a little down and spending a lot of time looking at baseball rosters, you know, there's a sustainability because the way they were going is that they were going to have to tear the team down. It was going to take another 5 years to build it back up, and there's no guarantee. I mean, look at, for example, in Cincinnati. I think they're on their fourth or fifth year in the rebuild, and they're sitting in the middle of the pack for the farm system. You know, there's almost no hope, you know, because there's no guarantee. You look at Kansas City, they break it down. Look how bad they are. 3.5 runs a game on offense where they had so many of the better young hitters in baseball. Now, so much of that's gone. And so with, you know, this Segura, Haniger, D. Gordon, all those guys are under contract. I mean, they can sustain this thing. You know, I would have to think they got to do a David Ortiz contract on Nelson Cruz, you know, a 2-year deal at like 32 to keep him. I think that's valid. You know, you kind of go year by year, but I think that they're in a good spot.
Right. And then the other thing that I think is highly unheralded is, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, Leak was a great acquisition. Gonzalez was a great acquisition. They were separate transactions DePoto made with the Cardinals. And then, you know, Wade LeBlanc, hey, keep him in there.
Mm-hmm.
He had a great start not too long ago. The other one was mediocre. But, you know, I think that the chemistry on this team is incredible. So going after a guy like Hamels from the Rangers, yeah, it's all, you know, he's got a lot of bells and whistles. But it's going to cost you a lot of money. And you know what? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's how I'm coming out on that, John.
Right. No question. No, I think it's going to be good. Hey, Jim, good to hear you back. Thanks for the phone call.
Okay, John. Bye-bye.
That's Raider Jim, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good.
How do you see the Seahawks defense shaping up?
You know, I look at it, I think it's going to be a little better. Or I guess it's going to be better than people think because, I mean, and that's why when you see the preview that they showed you last year in the last seven games, they didn't have Cliff Avril. They didn't have Cam Chancellor. They didn't have Richard Sherman. Okay, they weren't great. They lost three out of the – they were 3-4 down the stretch and had a bad game against the Rams. Yet in the pass defense, they gave up less than 300 yards a game. Or the pass defense, they gave up less than 200 yards a game, 61.2% completions, and they quarterback rating was maybe a little bit higher than they would want, but they were respectable. And so now – knowing that this is now going in, I guess, the second half year of trying to, you know, see what you had. Because remember, you know, with that, they had Shaquille Griffin and Byron Maxwell at corners. They're going to be the same. All right. They may or may not have Earl Thomas. That is still to be determined. They'll have Bradley McDougald. They're still, you know, patching now with Barkevious Mingo now at the one linebacker position. Clearly, the pass rush is going to be down. But I still think they can make that up. I know that was the conversation we're having all week, Tara, is that you know, they had 39 sacks last year. How do they make up the difference? Well, clearly Frank Clark needs to get you know, 12 or 13 sacks. They need to blitz a little bit more. They can get some more sacks out of Deion Jordan. And if they can get some inside sacks from Tom Johnson and the defensive tackles, then everything should be fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think that I like Quentin Jefferson. I think he can rush the passer pretty good. And I'm also high on Shaquille Griffin. Maybe he's obviously not going to take K.J. Wright's job.
Right.
But maybe mixing in packages to put somehow get him in the game, too, to rush the passer, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that the one thing that Pete likes about this group, he thinks it's one of the faster group of pass rushers. Now, is it accomplished? No. I mean, you know, your best, and that was so noticeable, Tara, in the mini camp and also in the OTAs, because Frank Clark missed all the 10 OTAs, and Deion Jordan was coming back from a knee surgery, and so they had Brandon Jackson and Jacob Martin as the starting defensive ends. Well, it's not what you would expect, but now they'll have everybody back. And again, I think it's a work in progress, but it's more workable than I think people outside see.
Yeah, I'm really excited for what this season brings for the offense and defense.
Mm-hmm. Nope, it should be good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Tara, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get a little bit of a Seahawk update. We'll talk to John Boyle from Seahawks.com. It's the John Clayton Show in 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is John Boyle from Seahawks.com. And I want to start off on a little bit of sad but happy moment here. Yesterday, put out after 42 years of great service and being such a great person, Sandy Gregory retired. I'm sad that she's not going to be there. I'm so happy for her, for what a great career and what a great person she was.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up right off the bat. Yeah, I mean, a lot of fans might not necessarily know who Sandy is, but she's had a huge role in this organization from the beginning. She was the last original employee still working for the team all the way back to 76 and, you know, just involved in so many ways over the years. Most recently, senior director of Legends, which meant, you know, she was working with, you know, keeping former players in touch, organizing a lot of events. And, I mean, over the years, you know, players doing stuff in the community, so much of that was Sandy. So she just had such a big impact on the both organization and the community as a whole. So it's really cool to see her get a nice send-off and enjoy the next phase of her life in retirement. Well-deserved.
Well, now, so much of it was on Twitter all through yesterday. So could you kind of give us a little insight as far as what they did? Because, you know, I didn't see it coming. I saw her at the mini camp and, you know, known her since I've been here in 1986 and just really cherished how great she was as a person. But what kind of a send-off did they have for her?
Yeah, you know, she really didn't want to make a big deal out of it. I think, you know, obviously she was touched by the players doing that, but she might also be a little mad at us over in the digital media department for trying to make a big deal out of it. But as, you know, we both know, she deserves it. And yeah, I mean, it was just reaching out to players. I'm sure you know Julie Barber well, who's been around a long time. And she was really involved in contacting players because, you know, normally when it's contacting players, that's Sandy's job, but we don't want Sandy planning her own send-off. So Julie and some other folks did a good job reaching out to some former players. And then we got Walter, Steve Largent, we got Matt Hasselbeck, and just a lot of great players past and present to give a little video shout out to Sandy and give her a good send off. And we had Claire Farnsworth write a story people can find over on Seahawks.com, because I had to bow out and let Claire write that one because he's been around a lot longer than me and knows what Sandy did for the organization a lot more than I possibly could. So yeah, it was, you know, we just tried to give her as good a send off as we could without making too big of a deal out of it, because she was going to not really want it to be about her too much, even though.
But that was great stuff. So Sandy Gregory, congratulations on a great career and also just being such a great person. Hope she still comes to the games because, you know, she's deserving.
I'm sure we'll see her around plenty.
Oh, no question. All right. So let's go because a couple things happened. Well, first off, yesterday, J.R. Sweezy surprisingly was let go by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was entering the third year of a contract that just didn't work out for the Bucs. He had that back injury that cost him the first season there. I mean, he got a good start last year, then broke his leg, and that didn't finish well. I don't know. Do you think there's a chance that the Seahawks would show interest in him?
You know, I wouldn't say there's no chance, because, you know, some of the coaching staff is around, including the head coach that brought him in, and the people who scouted him are for the most part still around. But, you know, you got to remember they did change offensive line coaches, and Tom Cable was as big a champion of J.R. Sweezy as there was. So, you know, to me, the Oakland would almost make more sense. I don't know their roster guard, what kind of need they have. But, yeah, I mean, look, the Seahawks always want to add competition. So if they take a look at him and feel like he's you know, in good shape. And if Solari likes, you know, likes him as a player, then maybe they bring him in, let him compete. But I will say, you know, we've heard a lot from Pete Carroll about how much they like kind of the continuity they potentially have with this line and a lot of pieces back in place from last year. So I don't think that, you know, from the outside, some people might think, boy, they really need to add offensive line help. But I think the Seahawks are pretty comfortable with that group and what they saw in offseason workouts and kind of the potential for it to grow if they keep it together.
Yeah. In fact, I wanted to try to go over that because what you wonder is if, you know, people are looking so much to the Tom Cable line, and this is much different with Mike Solari. And, you know, the, one of the things with Sweezy, I think when he left yesterday, he was only 295 pounds. What Seattle wants is big. Right now, the average weight on this line is 323.8, and so I don't know if 295 fits here, because remember, they got Ethan Posick up to 322 pounds, and so this line wants to be big and physical, not necessarily athletic.
Yeah, exactly, and that's where, you know, what I was saying kind of about the change in coaching could affect how they would view him, because as you just point out, they're really big. I mean, that's all the way across all five guys, that's about as big a line as I can remember this team putting out there. So, yeah, again, I wouldn't rule anything out altogether because you just never know. But, and this team's going to look at, I mean, they're going to at least consider it because they, you know, as John Schneider always says, they try to get involved in everything and then make a decision if it's right for them. So I certainly wouldn't close the door on anything. But, yeah, I do think that it would have made a lot more sense with the old offensive line coach here than the new one.
No question. All right, on another facet, Danielle Hunter, defensive end for the Vikings. I don't know if he helped or hurt things in the Frank Clark negotiations because they are so comparable to each other. Each has been in 47 games. Each has started 16 games over the first 3 years. Hunter, who had a 12.5 season in 2016, you know, was able to get 25.5 sacks. Frank Clark was able to get 22 sacks, and so they're very comparable. I don't know, does it help or hurt that he got $14 million a year, 14.4?
You know, I don't know, because we've seen that, you know, the real top-end pass rusher market is quite a bit higher than that, so I guess maybe it depends on what Frank Clark's going to do this year. If you get him locked up for a deal now and he goes out and has a 15-sack season, then you might get a bargain. If you decide to wait and he has that big year, it's probably going to cost you more. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. You know, obviously he's potentially the key to their pass rush this year. So, you know, whether they try to get something done before the season, that we're kind of still in that window where they'll negotiate with guys. We've seen them get some deals done on, you know, whether it's Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, guys going into the last year of their deal right before camp. So that could certainly still happen, but we've also seen them wait with guys. You know, KJ Wright comes to mind, where they kind of wait it out, see how they play, and then they make a decision late in the year if they want to do it. You know, we saw them do that with a few guys, and that's something they could look to do. But, yeah, it's going to be really interesting both for the Seahawks and for Frank to kind of see how this all plays out.
Oh, I agree. How good do you think Frank Clark is?
I mean, he could be really special. We've seen it in flashes, and, you know, he's taken on that starting role, played a lot of snaps when Cliff Averill was hurt. So, you know, to me, the big test is going to be, okay, how's he going to do it when he's kind of that number one guy? And they're obviously going to have other guys getting it done besides just him. But before, it was always Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, and Frank Clark. And, you know, not that he was getting cheap sacks, but it makes it a little easier sometimes when you have those other guys out there, whereas he's going to be a little more the focus of teams trying to stop him. But just, you know, when you talk sheer athleticism, I mean, we've seen those plays where he's jumping over guys trying to cut block him and making tackles. I mean, he's about as athletic as anybody they've had at that spot. So I think he could just really be in for a big year, and they need it, because, you know, as you were talking about before I came on, the pass rush is going to be a question. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a weakness for him, but it's a question mark, because they lost their two best guys, and when you lose your two best pass rushers, that's a big deal in the NFL.
No question. The one thing I think was interesting is that, and that's why I think it's probably better to sign him right now, because the example of waiting is the extra cost. You know, look what happened in Dallas with DeMarcus Lawrence. DeMarcus Lawrence had 9 sacks in his first 3 years. Then he had a 14.5 season last year where he really broke out because he became the number one guy. And now they had to franchise him at $17.1 million. And the next thing is that, you know, it's going to probably cost $17 a year to get him. And when you're, you know, have to eventually do a Russell Wilson contract, you have other core group guys that you want to keep. I think it's better to do something now. And also, it just, you know, you reward a player for doing something. And I do think, and again, I'm not you know, throwing out, should they pay him 14 or not? I think what they should, because again, there's a comparable there, but I think he's earned the right to get that second contract and not have to necessarily get that much more next year. I think better to get it done now.
Yeah, and you know, it's always kind of the risk reward for both sides, because you know, as you said, he could cost them a lot more. And then if you're Frank Clark's camp, you also wonder, you know, do I bet on myself and see if I can maximize it in free agency, or take the sure money now? So it's, you know, we see that all the time, especially guys on that first contract where they haven't got the big payday yet. So it's going to be, I think it'll be really interesting to watch how this unfolds between now and August.
All right, that another topic that was going, and it relates all obviously to the pass rush. You know, with the loss of Michael Bennett and the loss of Cliff Avrils, how do they make up those sacks? And I tried to break things down this week, and what I've noticed is that, and Dave Wyman kind of started it off, give him credit for that, he thought the magic number was 39. That was the number of sacks that they got last year, and since about 2012, the average has been 39. So how do you make up the difference? And so when I was going through this, I noticed that even though this team relies on the four-man rush to get to the quarterback, you know, they have years up and down where they would have some blitzes to get some sacks. So like, for example, they had 10 blitzes that got sacks, resulted in sacks back in 2016, and they had about 13 or 14 in the 2013 year. And so, you know, with Bobby Wagner having the potential to get 4 or 5 sacks, with Justin Coleman coming in and him getting 2 sacks on blitzes, you know, if they can get 28 to 32 sacks out of the defensive line, I think they can make up the difference.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, because, yeah, I mean, they're going to get that, as you said, a handful of sacks out of whether it's Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright blitzing. We'll see, you know, some of those nickel blitzes. Justin Coleman is really good at that. And then, yeah, it's okay, so can you get double digits out of Frank Clark? And, you know, Deion Jordan, it's a big if to say if he can stay healthy for 16 games, because he hasn't done that in a long time. But if he can, you'll look at the production he had late in the year. You could get pretty good numbers out of him. And you know, I know they're really excited about Barcavius Mingo and kind of that dual linebacker defensive end role he can have. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be easy to replace that production, but they do have guys they like. And as you said, it doesn't have to be, you know, Frank Clark getting 18 sacks to get the job done. I think it can kind of be spread out.
No question. What you kind of gather as far as, you know, the offseason has been very quiet, which I guess is, I mean, since the minicamp ended, I was going through some database stuff league-wide, and I don't think there was a single NFL arrest in June. That's encouraging.
Well, the league likes that, and the teams like that, that's for sure. I mean, that's the big fear this time of year. You hear coaches all around the league talk about, you know, they worry about the players kind of with the free time. So it's a great thing that players are behaving well. And I would say, I think that's, you know, I think it, with the few instances that do happen tend to get blown out of proportion, the vast majority of these guys are making good use of their time and doing good with it. So it's, you know, it's not necessarily surprising, but it's a good thing.
And now you're probably like me and follow some of the things, because this is the analytical time of the year where people are evaluating. I know Pro Football Focus broke down what they thought would be the most talented teams in the league, and you know, everybody else is doing the same thing. And you know, it appears, even though most forecasters have the Seahawks you know, down in the low teens as far as where they are as far as predictions, you know, I think Pro Football Focus had the Seahawks about 12th as far as their talent, and I think that's valid.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, there are question marks, as we've talked about, and I don't think anybody's going to just look at the Seahawks as they are now and say they are the favorite in the NFC or anything like that. But I don't know how you can look at a team with the, you know, guys like Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, you know, Doug Baldwin, Dwayne Brown. There's a lot of frontline talent there, and especially at the most important position in football. So, yeah, I just, you know, it's going to look different. There's going to be some new faces, and I think Pete Carroll's really excited about that, kind of how that's going to make things more competitive in a lot of spots. But, yeah, I don't think kind of the doom and gloom scenarios are really fair when you've got, you know, A, the talent this team still has, even with some guys leaving, and B, the head coach and front office that have proven themselves over close to a decade now.
Yeah, I know. I was talking yesterday, and some people were actually breaking down how good that this team can be on special teams. And clearly, you know, with the speed that they added in the draft and the special teams players that they brought back from last year, and, you know, you saw how good Michael Dixon can be. I didn't realize how good the deep snapper could be, Carew.
Yeah, you know, I'll admit I didn't know a lot about him because I don't follow long snapping. But, yeah, you look at, you know, the career he had at Oregon, and he was invited to the combine, which is pretty rare for a long snapper. And, yeah, I mean, you know, he's Tyler Ott's the incumbent, and they'll compete there. It's kind of cool. There's competition at all three specialist spots, so you got six guys out there doing it every day. So that's going to be fun to watch, really, how those all play out. But, yeah, I mean, I think Brian Schneider's pretty excited about what they've added, you know, in terms of both those guys that compete for the specialist spots and Janikowski, Dixon, and Carew, but then also just the overall athleticism, as you mentioned, you know, some speed in the draft. You got, you know, Tyler Lockett's a great returner, but it's going to be a nice luxury that you now have Rashad Penny as well, who can, you know, whether you want to split punt and kick return duties between those two or just kind of be able to spell Tyler Lockett, but a lot's going to be asked out of him on offense this year. So, yeah, I think that they're pretty excited about what that group can be.
Yeah, and finally, I know one of the things that they've kept John Ryan around for, aside from the fact he's a very good player, is his ability to hold. Can you kind of give a little bit of insight? Because Michael Dixon, you know, I think has a great chance to make this team as a punter because he's one of the more unique punters I have ever seen. How's he doing holding?
Yeah, you know, and that's something Pete Carroll talked about. He seems to be learning it and doing okay, but that's something he really didn't do a lot of in college. So that's, you know, it seems kind of like a little thing when people don't think anything of holding, but that's a really critical job because not every snap's going to be perfect. And even if they are, if you don't have a sure handed guy, that can lead to disasters. And, you know, you don't appreciate it when a guy's good at it because he just, you know, makes a play routinely every time. But John Ryan is great at that. And I mean, there's been times where you don't even notice it unless you watch a replay that it's a low snap and he has to kind of trap it and get it up real quick. And, you know, all that stuff is a factor. And, you know, I'm not saying that'll be the deciding factor, but it plays in. And if Michael Dixon's unable to get that part down to the level that John Ryan is, that'll be a factor in the competition for sure. But, yeah, I think it's interesting because we all just kind of assume, oh, you trade up, draft a guy in the fifth round, and that's your punter. But they're very serious about this competition, and John Ryan's taking it seriously that, you know, he's still got a chance to stick around. And it'll be fun to watch. You know, he's not going to go down without a fight, and I think he's going to make it real competitive all the way throughout.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think is going to be fascinating, just to kind of see how that competition goes. But, boy, I tell you, Dixon is such a unique punter that it can go well. And one example of how valuable a snap can be, you go back to the Tony Romo game where they're down ready
exactly.
to have that snap and all that stuff, and he missed it. And at that time, I think there was only Jake Plummer and Tony Romo were the only two quarterbacks that held. Everybody else was the punter, and he missed that snap. They lost the game.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know that example well, and yeah, and I mean, you mess up that part of the hold, and that can change a game. So yeah, that's going to be an important part of this competition, as we said.
Hey, John Boyle, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you're having a good time off, and looking forward to seeing you once camp starts.
Of course. Thanks for having me, John.
Okay, thank you very much. And, of course, that's John Boyle, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, I think when you look at the special teams, it's going to be kind of intriguing because, you know, they get the only snapper that was at the combine, and I guess, you know, apparently his reviews are great. And so I know it was funny when Bob Condotta, you know, keeps on doing his 53-man roster projections, which I think he does a very good job of doing that. He kept on putting Carew ahead of Tyler Ott. I'm saying, really? Well, now I think we now know why. Apparently, Carew has a pretty good reputation, and particularly at the 4 years at Oregon. So I think that he has a great chance to make this team. And naturally, the Dixon battle, it's just a matter, can he do the holding? Because I tell you, when you watch him punt, it's remarkable. Because what he does is he puts the ball so high and he puts it so long, and it's almost like you're watching somebody shooting at a duck with a gun, and all of a sudden, boom, you see the ball come down, and it's like it's coming down in so many different twists and turns and all that stuff, because he was a rugby player and is an Australian rugby player and was just remarkable. So it's going to be fun to kind of watch that competition. I know watching punting competitions may not be fun. This one's going to be fun. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.